Kegelmu stands for Generalized Extensible LaTeX-like Markup. This is what it's about. The idea got underway. I was teaching an honors calculus class in 1995. And within the last year and a half preceding that, I had learned about the web, and I had learned how to learned how to write HTML pages. I had learned how to serve DVI files and PostScript files on the web. I didn't know about PDF at that time. Well, I might have known about it, but I certainly didn't know how to make PDF in a decent way at that time, or in a way that was convenient for me. Let me put it that way. But in an honors calculus class, one wants to enrich the course, one wants to present material that's not in the textbook, and so course handouts are part of the scene. And how do you write a course handout? You write it in LaTeX Source, and you want something to hand out to the students on paper. So that's, these days, that's PDF, in those days it was DVI, and you want something to show them online. You notice that the math is scaling up. As I scale the slide, the math is scaling with the text. And I don't know whether you saw the bottom of the slide, but this is HTML. This is the modern form of HTML with MathML incorporated. You are not looking at a graphic image. You're looking at an XML file in the XML document type called XHTML plus MathML. That's what you are looking at. Now the tech community, in a sense, the tech community has been dealing with XML since the very beginning. This is in the following sense. A DVI file is, in some sense, equivalent to a file that is an XML object under an XML document type. This is because any classical assembly language can be modeled as an XML document type, and those of us who know DVI format know that DVI has the structure of a classical assembly language. One sees this most clearly by using Jeffrey Toobin's old tool for converting a DVI file to a so-called DTL file. DTL file is a text file that you can actually play with a little bit if you know DVI language, and then convert it back to DVI. It's not a very useful remark, it's not a very practical remark that a DVI file can be thought of as some kind of XML file, but I'm trying to convey the idea that get rid of the idea of fear and loathing that some people have towards XML. I want to show you a few more examples of math in HTML. The World Wide Web Consortium's math group has worked very hard in making this possible, and the Mozilla team, and particularly Roger Sidgi, who is the principal Mozilla developer for MathML, has worked very hard in making what I regard as a very beautiful display of mathematics on the web possible. This is an expansion of the this is a computation of the continued fraction expansion of the square root of 10. This is a short excerpt. It's an equation array taken from a set of class notes that I produced a number of years ago. And I can, most of you are aware that web browsers can be scaled, and normally the whole document flow, a document, an HTML document will flow as a whole, but the slide package that I'm using, which is a product, something put out by Dave Raggett of the World Wide Web Consortium, the slide controls are a JavaScript add-on, and each slide flows by itself. If I enlarge a slide, everything else in the document is enlarging, but there's no flow across slides. That is, the readjustment takes place within a slide. This is an excerpt from a classroom slide presentation. This is one of the torture tests developed by the Mozilla MathML crowd I think it was developed by the Mozilla people. This is found at the Mozilla website. This is another one. This is this results from a challenge that was issued in public by David Modori. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce his name. It appeared in sci.math.research. I think, I said when it was in the pre-talk notes, and I don't remember what the year was, maybe 2003 or some year like that. And his point, he showed the tech markup, and then they showed the corresponding MathML markup, and indeed, his point was that nobody would ever want to write the corresponding MathML markup, and that is indeed correct. Nobody would ever want to write the corresponding MathML markup, and fortunately, we don't need to. Although it's underlying this slide, but it's auto-generated. This is an excerpt from another set of class notes. This is part of an explanation of how the notion of zeta function for an algebraic variety, and you don't want to know the mathematics. This is a markup crowd, but the zeta function for an algebraic variety over a finite field is a special case of the notion of zeta function for a scheme, a finite type over the integers. That's a notion that I know from Sayre's Purdue talk. But you don't want to know that. So dual presentation, the idea is one source. One wants print output for paper, and one wants online output. If there's no math involved, you just produce regular HTML that's more universal, that it's more people can read it. If math is involved, you want XHTML with math. And then there's the question, how to write. Standard answers. Number one, write LaTeX, then translate. From my point of view, this is not the best way to proceed with material that is being written today. But it is hugely important to do what can be done with this approach because of the fact that we have 30 years of legacy tech documents. And for each of those documents, the best source is the original source. And as time goes by, we will learn better and better techniques for dealing with those old documents. It's enormously important. But for new documents, I think it's not the way to proceed. And the way to proceed is to write something that can be automatically, with complete reliability, translated to LaTeX or to the modern form of HTML with MathML. About translating, that is, about method one, if one's going to translate, if one's going to translate, or if one wants to write today with the intention of translating LaTeX, that is, of using the LaTeX source for something other than standard DVI and PDF outputs, the source needs to be carefully written. It needs to be carefully structured. That was Lamport's original intention in creating LaTeX. One may expect the need for customized tuning of something that's going to be translated, and there's going to be something of a hidden learning curve in learning to use a given translator with one's documents. I regard this as tough. The Gelmu approach, one must first learn something new. One writes with LaTeX-like syntax. One is not actually writing LaTeX. One wants to think just a little bit differently than one thinks when one is writing LaTeX. One is not writing for the page. One is writing for something that is abstract. It's not quite like a page. And one uses the vocabulary, a slightly different vocabulary, that is the vocabulary of an HTML document type. One of the advantages of that is that as soon as the source is written, it can be translated to HTML in a very standard way, and that HTML document can be given a freestanding validation for structural correctness. There's nothing parallel to this with standard LaTeX. I want to convey the impression here today that operating this way is easier for new documents than operating that way. Conceptual differences in this approach, that is, in writing Gelmu source as opposed to writing LaTeX source, there are no pages. It's not quite true that there are no vertical lengths, but you want to pretend that there are no vertical lengths. Horizontal lengths, you want to, if you think about lengths at all, and mainly you don't want to think about lengths at all, But sometimes you do need to think about lengths and size, especially if you're writing slides. You want the lengths to be relative. Your markup should express content. Actually, this is an old message that we can find in Lamport's book on LaTeX. There is a place for style in this system, but it's not in the source. I'll explain that later. And along with that, we don't want to think about putting font commands. There are no font commands for Gelmu source. That doesn't mean that there's no place to exercise control over fonts in various kinds of output along the way, because these choices do get made. Technical markup differences. There's no declaration style markup. Issuing a command inside braces that is intended to have scope within those braces, that is not something that is provided for here. Braced zones are available to provide logical grouping, especially and most particularly in math when that's appropriate. That is, you brace something. For instance, in an equation, you might, in the right side of an equation, you might want to brace an expression that is a sum and. So for instance, a braced expression followed by a plus, followed by another braced expression. Those braces, I'm talking about the same kind of effect that such braces would have in LaTeX, that is, they're invisible braces that just, they nonetheless affect how the content is understood. And they provide logical grouping, not scope. In this markup, there's not really a difference between a command and an environment. So, for example, the sequence begin display followed by end display is the same as backslash display inside braces. Between a command and its arguments, there's no space allowed. That is, there's enforcement of rigid syntax. This is a characteristic, for example, that TechInfo has that LaTeX does not have. In a TechInfo source file, you can look at a command construction. There's a short list of possible syntactical meanings that a command can have in a TechInfo file, and those are the only ones that are allowed. And LaTeX is different. Each of the 33 non-alpha numeric but printable ASCII characters may. It's not always necessary, but sometimes it's a good idea, sometimes it's silly. But they may, when you need to, they may all be referenced by names. And one name that's commonly needed is the name of the ASCII tilde character. This corresponds roughly to backslash text ASCII tilde in LaTeX, but it's not exactly the same thing. You see, That, by the way, the tilde character in Gelmu's source, as in LaTeX source, is markup for non-breaking space. There are no counters in Gelmu's source, but there is a way to have the equivalent thing. Counters ride with labels, and for each label, there is a series attribute, an SGML style attribute that one may optionally provide, and the series attribute is the name is a name, a series name that you may think of as a counter. The system flowchart. One starts with Gelmu source, which looks like LaTeX source. There's a syntactic translator that translates it to SGML. The syntactic translator understands the syntax but does not understand the vocabulary. It has, you can give it a tiny amount of knowledge of vocabulary. One example of the kind of knowledge you can give it is there is a list of names of commands before which a blank line should not be considered to start a new paragraph. That can be done. The SGML source is then translated into what I call author level XML source. This corresponds to the XML. This should be regarded as the principal XML document type that models is models the LaTeX article language as closely as it does. That it's a rather close model of, but not, it's not exactly the same thing, but it models as closely as I think reasonable the language of LaTeX. This document type is the document type for which one should write if translating outside SGML or XML source. That is one way, if you have a document type, another document type which does not come with a formatter for LaTeX, for example, or a formatter for XHTML with MathML. One thing you could do rather than write your own formatter for each of those things is to write a formatter that translates that document type to this document type and then enter the production stream at this point to go into these outputs. Said a short while ago that style choices don't belong in the source file. Style choices are made in the formatters, that is, the formatters are represented by these arrows at the right end of the chart. It's the bottom end of the chart in the notes. That chart's transposition. This is landscape presentation. Style versus content. So for example, instead of begin center, end center, we can have backslash display or begin display, end display. As I said before, the two are equivalent. Backslash IT or the backslash text IT command are font commands. Actually, they're not raw font commands, but they're font commands. Use env. Env, by the way, in Gelmu source, as in LaTeX source, is order 2. that is emph within emph is normal. /BF, well, laptops, this is a nervous laptop. BF, boldface, font, too font-like, it's sort of political. Some people would say bold sounds like font, doesn't to me. I think it sounds like a content kind of character. It's an alternate kind of emphasis. Text SC, well, if it's an abbreviation or an acronym, use ABBR. That is, there's no text SC in Gelmu's source, again, because it's too font-like. TT or text TT, again, too font-like. Most of those things, quostring, quoted string, or path, if it's a path, that is a file system path, or if it's a URL, okay, what can you do if it's a URL? If you want a live anchor at that point in online content, there's a command /URL ANCH. Or you could write a new command to make URL whatever you want it to be. But if you're just printing a URL for somebody to look at and not to click on, path is probably a good choice. This is technical stuff. I'm not sure you want me to go through it quickly. I'll point out one thing. For example, in a LaTeX file, classically we entered /E to get an acute E, and Gelmu's source, at the XML stage, well, look, this is available at the XML stage, but the question is this: if I want to have this at the XML stage, I could enter this in Gelmu's source. By the way, the driver script needs to be told if you're entering raw UTF-8 in Gelmu's source, you want the driver script to know that your source has raw UTF-8, and right now that's not standard for the source. What's safer in that direction for raw source would be this kind of SGML style entity reference, /sharp xe9, which is the code for acute E. But if you're going to run through the kind of LaTeX engine at the end that we have today, you probably don't want the LaTeX source that's going to be written from this XML source to contain raw UTF-8 there. Of course, this is Latin 1, that's something else, but nonetheless, you may want to proceed in the old-fashioned LaTeX way. In that case, modeling it as XML, we have a number of so-called algorithmic accents that have names like acute. That's one way to proceed. There's also this other way to proceed. This is now, since the second edition of Lamport's book, this kind of markup that you see in the left column, /frac23 for the fraction 2/3 is deprecated because it is somewhat obfuscated. It certainly syntactically obfuscated. That is, you have to know how, you have to know that frac is a command expecting two arguments to be able to have a chance at interpreting the meaning of that. And we're talking about modular components, and the first layer of processing doesn't know vocabulary, it knows only syntax. So, and as I say, even since Lamport's second edition, backslash frac 2.3 without braces to make it quite explicit that these are arguments, that's deprecated in current LaTeX. Backslash left, backslash right, actually these are mistakes. That is, the braces need to be escaped. Sorry about that, but you know what I'm talking about that. The command for balance braces is what is used. So, how do we do it? Here's a very short example document. Instead of beginning with document class, it begins with document type. When do I end?
10 minutes.
Thanks. It begins with document type instead of document class. This will in fact be the name of the root element in the XML that is generated. There are ways to configure this. By the way, one of the document types that you can use directly if you want to write directly for a particular XML document type, for example, you could use HTML. And then you would use the vocabulary of HTML. That's possible. The advantage of, this is a very nervous computer today. The advantage of doing that is you have new command available, new command with arguments available. But if you wanted to do that for writing HTML, you're probably already set up to use M4 to do it, and you wouldn't want to bother with this. For writing HTML. The title is required. The title, the make title is going to happen automatically. If you don't like the way it happens, you change the formatter. You change the appropriate arrow at the right end of the chart. The title is required, but it may have empty content. Begin document, end document, as in LaTeX. And then, okay, the two other things here that are not quite standard as part of LaTeX, for to have semantically sensible mathematic summations must be closed off at the end. There are contexts where a processor that wants to think about the question can reasonably decide where a summation ends. There are other contexts where it can't. For instance, a so-called iterated sum where you're summing over I and then summing over j in one's mind's eye, one knows where the inner sum ends. Well, sometimes, in fact, there are explicit parentheses or braces to indicate where the inner sum ends. But in any case, this markup requires that sum int and prod for sums, integrals, and products, these things must be terminated. And so the sum of the first n integers, that's what that is. The classical formula that any mathematician will know is that it's n times n plus 1 over 2. It's the most basic arithmetic progression. This is an end of sentence marker. You can use a dot. It will work, but what is the point of having it be a formal end of sentence marker? A dot can be understood, using the formal end of sentence marker is to indicate that this is not to be understood as mathematically semantic. It's the end of the sentence. It's in a math zone, but it should be excluded from mathematical semantics. That's why the end of sentence marker is provided. Okay, you save it as a file, small doc with suffix glm. You go to a command line and enter mmkg small doc. You read the scroll. There's a substantial scroll that's going to go by. The blank lines that correspond to stages in what's happening. At each stage, for instance, at the stage where you've just translated the SGML, that there's a validating parse of that SGML that precedes making the author level XML, and then there's a validating parse of that author level XML that is used to make the elaborated XML. The elaborated XML file is unlike the author level XML, thank you. The author level XML file is a standalone XML document. The elaborated XML file is not. What's happened? The elaborated XML file has a bunch of preliminary formatting steps made, including resolution of cross references, working out of section numbers, few other things. And then it hits LaTeX, and it runs through LaTeX as many times as it needs to run through LaTeX. Then we come to the task of making the modern form. Actually, before the LaTeX was made, classical HTML output was generated. I want to show you however, that there's a three-stage process. It's not shown in the chart that I showed you, but there's a three-step process for making the modern HTML with MathML. There's a stage where the C data inside math elements. So math elements are the math elements generated by dollar signs in your text. You can also have backslash open parenthesis, backslash close parenthesis for inline math. You can have backslash open bracket, backslash close bracket for display math. You can refer to these things. You can have the option always of referring to these things by their element names, which I won't go over what they are, but you have that option. The loose text inside of a math, every nugget of loose text inside a math container needs to be packaged. And this happens at the first step. And then there's a following step where the contents of the math zones, this is prior to generating MathML, the processors that are being used are stream processors rather than processors that swallow the whole document at once and then analyze it. These are stream processors, and what's happening is that tree data for each MathML, for each math zone is being generated so that it's possible for the final stage to know where something stands inside its math zone, and for example, to know what comes before and what comes after a given element. So So that's what the, that's what's happening, and that's what's in the scroll. And we have the output. Of course, we can make it as large as we like here. But now, the small sample document, what's this going to do? It's going to bring up Acrobat Reader. I do have XPDF. This is a Windows machine, and I have XPDF running under Cygwin X11, but the Firefox is running natively, and there's no way it can see what it needs to see to bring up XPDF.
You're in a browser right now?
Yes, I've been in a browser. Firefox. I've been in the slides have all been in Firefox. Shall we build a document live? The idea is this is easy. Let's build a document. This is a UTF-8 X-term. Does everybody know that X-terms now do UTF-8? See the euro symbol there? Is that visible? That's 20 AC. It's not a Latin 1 symbol. All right, so I have a file here, gamma.glm. So I'll open an Emacs. Where do I have to go for this? I don't have Octec on this machine, otherwise we'd see colors. But this is the file. Okay, we go back to the, oh, here we are. And there's nothing else. I've showed you directory listing. There's nothing else here. So you see the pace at which it goes. This is not a very fast machine, by the way. What? The figure's not there. All right. That's a mistake. So the figure's missing. That's the LaTeX, and let's see if we can find. Find the XHTML in Mozilla. gamma.xhtml. There it is. Not hard. Questions?
Which DTTs are used for the elaborated XML?
Which what?
DTTs, in which document type definition is this XML formatted?
It's the elaborated, well, there are five DTTs. The question was, which DTD is used for the elaborated XML document type? It's just a slight modification of the author level DTD. The five DTDs, two HTML DTDs and three XML DTDs in the Gelmu distribution. It's just a slight modification. They're technical things, but it's a slight modification. There's certain things that go into the elaborated file that an author shouldn't do. So that's why it's a separate DTD.
Could you say again how you include graphics? Like a JPEG or
post? It's basically, you prepare your own graphics, just as with LaTeX. For instance, if you have a MetaPost graphic, that's encapsulated. You get encapsulated PostScript, and then you probably the best bet is to do EPS to PDF, which is a GhostScript application, to get a PDF version, and that PDF version then will be used in your PDF output. The encapsulated PostScript will be used in your DVI output, and then you use a converter, probably NetPBM or maybe ImageMagick. You use a converter to, or if you're on Windows, you might even just, I don't hang out on Windows. I'm not sure what's the best thing to convert with on Windows. I guess ImageMagick is available, but you want PNG, okay? And then there's a procedure. When you run PDF LaTeX, you want to hide the PNG so that PDF LaTeX will grab the PDF, because the PDF is closer to the EPS. And there's a little file, gamma.prx, where you would, it's a list of file names that you want to hide when PDF LaTeX is running for this specific purpose.
This is more of a comment, I guess, than a question, but the Cascading Style Sheets version 3 has a presentation mode. It's available in Opera. I don't know what else it's available in, but you know, you can press F11, and you have markers for presentation mode, and it'll expand and it'll paginate. So you could avoid, you could have both paper and slides very conveniently that way.
I guess it's a comment. The comment is that Cascading Style Sheets version 3 has provision for presentation mode. I'm relying more or less on CSS2 at this stage, and I've only been relying on CSS2 for about a year. That is, it takes a while for this stuff to get out there.
Okay, thank you very much.